Good morning, everyone. Welcome back. I'm going to call the Human Services, Finance, and Policy Committee to order. Let's see, today, members, we have three bills on the agenda dealing with healthcare workforce issues and home and community-based services. But first, let's get our business finished. We need to first take roll, and then we'll approve the minutes. Ms. Hansen, can you take the roll? Chair's present.
Yes, good morning. Schultz present, Vice Chair Bonner. Lead Albright.
Good morning.
Good morning. Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Burkle.
Burkle present.
Representative Fisher.
Fisher present.
Representative Frederick.
Present.
Thank you. Representative Keel. Representative Liebling.
Present.
Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Noor.
Present.
Thank you. Representative Pearson, or I'm sorry, Representative Novotny.
Novotny present.
Would not want to forget you, sir. Representative Pearson.
Pearson present.
Thank you. Representative Pinto.
Present.
Thank you. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen present.
Representative Robbins.
Present.
Thank you. Representative Sandel.
Present.
Representative Schumacher.
Schumacher present.
And Vice Chair Bonner, I see you. Thank you very much.
Hansen present.
Thank you, Representative Hansen.
Okay, members, we have a quorum. Thank you, Ms. Hansen. Let's see the minutes from March 1st. Who would like to move the minutes? Representative Albright, would you like to move the minutes from March 1st?
Excuse me, so moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Albright moves the minutes from March 1st. Are there any corrections to the minutes? Not seeing any. All those in favor of moving the minutes from March 1st, 2022, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. Okay, members, the first bill on our agenda is House File 338. We heard this bill last year, but I believe there is a technical amendment, and Representative Cleavorn, welcome back to our committee. Would you like to adopt the technical amendment and then discuss your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would appreciate that.
Okay, I'm gonna move the A1 amendment and we'll take a voice vote. All those in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Cleavorn, to your bill as amended. The motion is to lay House File 338 as amended over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Omnibus Bill. Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just for the committee members, if they haven't had a chance to review the amendment, all it does is change two dates. The first date is the report for the legislative committee, and the second date is for the date of the appropriation. And I would just like to give the committee a quick reminder as to the content of House File 338. It requires Health Force Minnesota at Winona State to develop a pilot project establishing the Minnesota Direct Care Service Corps with financial incentives and minimum work requirements. It also establishes pilot sites, locations, and duties, and it requires an evaluation and a report. The bill, as amended, would appropriate $500,000 from the general fund to the Commissioner of Human Services. And with that, Madam Chair, Diane Drost is with me today, and she would just like to speak briefly to the importance of the need for the establishment of the Direct Care Service Corps pilot project. So with that, I ask you to please recognize Ms. Drost.
Thank you, Representative Cleavorn. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Drost. Please introduce yourself and then continue with your testimony. Oops, you're muted.
Okay, start again. Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me to testify. My name is Diane Drost. My address is 4722 Barber Drive, Minnetonka. I am here to ask for support of our bill, the Minnesota Direct Care Service Corps pilot. I'm a member of Women's Steady Spine, which is a spinal cord injury group, support group for women who are supporting their adult children with spinal cord injuries. but I'm also a member of the cross-agency direct care and support workforce shortage group and the Metropolitan Center for Independent Living's Community Innovation PCA project. My daughter Sam sustained a high level of spinal cord injury resulting in quadriplegia a year after her first year of college. She is approved for personal care assistance support of 11 hours per day, but currently she's only been able to recruit one person who works 6 hours a week. My husband and I cover the rest of her hours. Because Sam is a quadriplegic and has significant physical and health needs, she also actually qualifies for nursing support. However, this too has been affected by the home care shortage. And last month, her agency actually has said to her she would need to sign off on where she would like to go if Greg and I no longer can provide care. Her choices were to a hospital or to a group home. So I've watched Sam as she has attempted to hire caregivers. Often we're beat out by other large healthcare employers in terms of hourly pay, hiring bonuses, scholarship, loan forgiveness programs, and other incentives. Even those people who want to work in home care prefer working with people who have less needs like Sam. We need a lot of solutions to solve this problem. The recommendations to establish the service corps have been included in several reports, and I think that I've spoken to those in the past. The time has come for us to really look towards college students for help in caring for our people. We believe that we can mobilize an entire generation of student workers to the field by offering them the opportunity to become part of a service corps. In addition, these students would also have the opportunity to receive an hourly pay for the part-time work. We understand that if our service corps pilot program is successful, we need to look at ways to sustain it going into the future. So as part of the work that we are doing, we've connected with Serve Minnesota, and we are in the process of collaborating with them on our model to see if this is a possibility. So I thank you for listening to me. I want to be very brief because I know most people have heard all about the workforce shortage, but I really want to stress how important it is that we keep these people living in their homes and communities. The choice between going into a hospital or a group home is beyond my belief. I mean, Sam is a vibrant young woman. She works as a data scientist at Target. She contributes to her community. And Greg and I are both getting older. So this is a real scary situation for us and for her, as many people, and anybody can sustain an injury or develop an illness which results in a physical and health disability like Sam. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Drost, and thank you, Representative Cleavorn, for bringing this bill back. It's an important bill. We need to be creative about how we increase the pipeline for PCAs and direct support professionals. So I think it's a great bill. Are there any questions for the bill author or the testifier? Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Representative Cleavorn. You mentioned the Health Force Minnesota, and I know that they have implemented programs in the past, and I'm wondering if you could give a summary in terms of the programs that they currently provide and if there are any success stories that you'd like to highlight.
Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Representative Albright. Unfortunately, I did not come prepared to speak to Health Force Minnesota. They are a highly qualified program through our Minnesota state system. And I'm happy to provide that information for you at a later date. I do not believe that we have Ms. DeFore on the call today. Is Valerie on the call today?
Valerie is not on the call. She's out of state.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Albright, I'm happy to get some of that information to you if you wanna send me an email for the concerns that you have. Thank you.
Representative Albright, maybe if we have time this session, we can get an overview of the Health Force Minnesota work and committee. Representative Albright?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And that's unfortunate because this is, I think you have to understand the context in which you're suggesting that a new program be implemented based upon what is already in place. And so I guess my next question would have been, and maybe it still might be in terms of,
yeah.
There, you know, you're referring to the March 2018 report that talks about, you know, expanding, diversifying, and improving Minnesota's direct care workforce.
Mm-hmm.
So help me understand why a program of $500,000, even with a $25,000 max on admin, is going to assist in a pilot program. What are the objective measurements that you hope to identify by this general fund expenditure?
Representative Cleavorn?
Thank you. Representative Albright, I just would like to refer you back to the February 9th, 2021 testimony at that time of Ms. DeFore. I believe you asked many of these same questions and she answered them at that time. So it's possible that you already have the answers to these questions in your notes from before.
Representative Albright?
That seems like an eternity to go, Representative Cleavorn. And so I'm just trying to remind myself of what we're talking about in the context of this bill. So, and I hope that, you know, we don't get into a contest of, you know, referring back to prior testimony, even though this bill was heard in committee some time ago. I think it's important that you remind the committee of what the purpose of this bill is and why you feel it should be included in the omnibus bill. And given that, that's why I'm asking these questions. So please summarize, and rather than referring me back to testimony that I probably would take 3 days to find anyway.
Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Representative Albright. And what I would say to you is this. The bill is very simple. It's very clear. It established it. And I believe that Ms. Drost answered the questions pretty clearly. We have an overwhelming need for PCAs at this time in our state. This is an opportunity for us to do two things. One, to help create a workforce going forward with the aid of Health Force Minnesota at Winona State, to help us create pilot programs to see if we can help create a workforce for PCAs. In my own community right now, we have group homes that are also getting ready to shutter because we have no people to care for individuals who are living with profound physical disabilities. It is a time for us to be creative and for us to enlighten a whole new generation of individuals about the possibility of doing service this way while getting their college degrees. And maybe even it will help with the health the workforce shortage that we have in the healthcare industry as a whole. I don't understand which piece of the bill that you don't understand. It's very clear, it's very simple as to what we're doing, and I would be happy to meet with you and come to your office and talk with you about this in greater detail. Thank you. And I would be happy to do a Zoom with Ms. DeFore when she's back in the state.
Thank you, Representative Cleavorn. I do recall that testimony and a lot of support from Winona and the system, Minnesota State system, for this program. And I don't believe they thought it was duplicating any existing program. Representative Albright.
Evidently, my internet connection is a bit unstable. I did not hear the response from Representative Cleavorn, but suffice to say, ambiguity is not the friend of legislation. So at some point, I do hope that there's brought a little more clarity brought to this in terms of it's nice and platitudes, you know, suffice to say, you know, utilizing financial incentives, we're going to, you know, put $500,000 towards figuring something out. I think there needs to be a little more clarity in terms of what those programs might be. What is the desire for $500,000? Of taxpayer money being spent on a program without having us understand what that really looks like, what you hope to achieve, you know, what's the scope of the pilot program, other than to identify it as we want to figure out how to attract students to be PCAs. Great idea, but help me understand in future a little more in terms of what the scope of that really means. I need a little more definition. I'll end it with that.
Thank you, Representative Albright. Representative Robbins.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. May I
sure.
just-
Sure, Representative Cleavorn.
I again would like to refer Representative Albright back to the materials that were presented in February of 2021. There was an entire work plan that was provided to the committee at that time when we vetted the bill in full. Again, this is a bill that the committee has discussed, debated in full in February of 2021. My reason for coming here today is to extend 2 dates. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Claiborne. And I will remind the public that bills that were introduced last year are still alive. And so we are just bringing this bill back to update the dates in the amendment. And this bill was not included in our last HHS omnibus bill. And we're hoping to possibly include it in this year's bill. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Claiborne. I have a follow-up question with information since we heard this last year. So my parents live in an older community, and one of their neighbors actually participates in a program where they have a college student come in and do this care. And I honestly don't know what program it's with, but it already exists. And when I was at the Our State, Our Future conference at the University of Minnesota last week, there was flyers in the building at the Humphrey School with little tear-offs where they were encouraging college students to sign up to be PCA. So I didn't know about those things last year, but clearly either through the private sector or through an existing program, this is already going on and college students get paid and they're encouraged. You didn't have to be in the major of, going into the healthcare field. It was open to any major. So I just wondered, I'm a little leery of, now that I know more about this, creating a pilot program when it seems like this is already happening. So I don't know if it's happening just in the private sector or if there's already existing pilot programs, but I would like more information before, this gets included in the final omnibus, because if this is already going on, I'd like to, we have limited resources, target it either towards an existing program that's happening or just, this is already going on. We're okay with it. So any follow-up you have on that would be great. Thank you.
Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to Representative Robbins, there are PCAs and there are PCAs, and they, not all PCAs do the same work. And I would say to you, for the individuals that we are discussing today and that have come to me and our community asking for this pilot core, these are individuals who have profound health issues. The individuals who care for them must be trained in life-threatening instances that could arise at any moment. And that is why we want to make sure that the people who are serving as PCAs are trained, who have the qualifications to go into these homes. And the reason that college students, and I'm really glad to hear about the program that you were discussing, more is better, but we need to make sure that everyone who is serving as a PCA really has the tools and the experience necessary to be able to care for these individuals. And the individuals living with quadriplegia that I have worked with really like having college students. They are of the same age. They can intellectually communicate and relate to them. They understand the importance of acting quickly and responding on their feet. And they have the intellectual curiosity to understand and to find out what is going on and why. So I would say more is better. And thank you for your comments.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Claiborne. And I appreciate that training is necessary, but the bill says the pilot must utilize financial incentives to attract post-secondary students to work as PCAs or direct support professionals. It doesn't really indicate anything about what level of training they would be required to have. So if you want to target it towards specific training, maybe that's something we could add down the road, but the bill as stands just seems like about it providing financial incentives for anyone in this field. So, and I agree, young people are great. They relate to older people, but my nephew also has special needs and he has a PCA and he loves when it's someone his age. He feels like they're cool. He loves hanging out with them. It's more of a social engagement for him. So I totally get it, but I just want to make sure that we're using resources wisely. So thank you.
And I would agree with using resources wisely. Thank you.
And I'll just add that we have a need of over, I think there's 13,000 slots available for PCAs in the state. And so I think having multiple avenues, pathways to become a PCA is probably more ideal than just one. And I am familiar with these recruitment advertisements on campus. I have a lot of current students that work in group homes. And so I think it's a lot of private sector providers that are trying to solicit college students to work. And I'm not that familiar with how much they're getting trained to work in group homes. And I think the program that Representative Cleburne is trying to create is more for individual PCAs that would work with individual clients rather than necessarily in group homes. But I see another question from Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a little disturbed about the conversation. I think that PCAs are very important. I have watched people that get very little training that are very successful and knowledgeable about taking care of people. I also think that there are nurses, aides in nursing homes that need more training. And let's just put it that way. I won't go into any stories. However, Representative Cleburne, my concern is your response to Representative Albright that we can just look back. We have public listening to this right now. They certainly want to know what does this mean for them and their family. What are they looking at? What do they need? And I think we really need to make sure that we're explaining to people what we're doing with this money, because while the pilot program might be in certain areas, it doesn't mean it can't be in others. I've got nursing homes that run pilot of their own programs. And they've been funded a little bit now in nursing home care, but a lot of my PCAs that I know are doing both. They're in a nursing home, they're doing PCA services. And so I appreciate that we've talked about this before, but I think we have to remember we have a lot of people listening that are saying, gee, you know, what would this do for me? So we need to make sure that we have that background, because they're going to have a heck of a time trying to find the data from last year. I just want us to be really careful about referring back and making sure that people understand Minnesota is a big state. There's a lot of things that can happen here, but maybe the pilot program works well for some areas, but we need to know the detail. And even if it's $500,000 or we're spending $50 on it, we need to know where that dollars go and how effective it will be. So, and how important it is that we are doing the right things so that we can get as many personal care attendance services that people need. So thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you,
Representative Keel. Representative Cleburne.
I understand. I see that Ms. Strauss has tried to raise her hand several times. If we could go to her and let her sure. speak to the issue, since she's impacted personally.
Ms. Strauss.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have before me the Minnesota State Health Force Center of Excellence proposal that was written by Valerie DeFore, and I would be glad to send it to you, and you can disseminate it through the committee. I can speak to the goals that are on here, the pilot outline, and how the evaluation will take place. And secondly, one of the things that I mentioned were references to three recommendations from three different groups. And what they have found is, yes, there's scholarships out there, there's incentives, there's loan forgiveness. It all depends on what agency and organization you're going through. When we drilled down, when we prepared the report for the Olmstead Subcommittee, one of the suggestions was to develop a service corps to expand the workforce. The reason for that is no one goes into home care working with this particular population. They are the lowest paid of anybody in the health support area as far as home care. If you want to work in a nursing home or with the elderly, they get a totally different funding resource. If you're working in group homes, that's a totally different funding resource. There are many, many wonderful programs in our state that, as a parent, when I went in, I thought, oh my gosh, this is wonderful. Look at all the programs out there to support people who want to work with people like Sam. And even when I called about the community-based home, it was a community-based scholarship program through Home and Community-Based Services for people living in their own homes. What I discovered was that is only for people over the age of 65 or if you have a developmental disability. So yes, there are many programs out there. There's places all over the place. We have campus fairs. Depending on what disability you are, there's events, there's tons and tons of recruitment opportunities out there to get people to work in the field. However, the one group that isn't out there is our group. It's people living at home by themselves. They're very isolated. They work with small home care agencies. Our agencies don't have access to all of those programs. That is why this suggestion of developing a service corps was placed in the recommendations that have been given to the sub-cabinet of Olmstead, and also at the summit in 2016 that DHS sponsored. DHS sponsored the cross-agency group, and now there's even another group that I'm working on that is trying to carry this out. So there's, if you'd like the copy from Valerie, I can send it over, I can fax it to Ginny and she can disseminate it. Or if you'd like me to read the goals, I'd be glad to do that right now.
Thank you, Ms. Drost. If you can send that, we can forward it to committee members. Representative Cleburne?
Yeah, I would just like to reference that the work plan that Ms. Drost is referencing is the Olmstead sub-cabinet dated July 16th, 2018.
Thank you, Representative Cleburne. Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would like to say thank you to Representative Cleburne and Ms. Drost for being here today to talk about the bill and present it. One of the things that I very much appreciate is the part of the bill that is taking a look at the evaluation report. And I know Ms. Drost highlighted on that a little bit. And one of the key things I think is going to be very helpful is when the report comes out, it's also going to be talking about retention issues. Mm-hmm. And I think that is one of the key things to be able to have this pilot done and to be able to have an evaluation report coming out and saying what's being effective and what isn't. We know we've got many challenges out there, and this is, sounds like a perfect time to be able to get something like this through. So I want to say thank you for bringing this back forward to us. Thank you for the explanation. And thank you for having a great evaluation and reporting mechanism built into this to make sure that we have the accountability in there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for that comment, Representative Fisher. And I'll just remind the public that HHS, we spend $16 billion on our budget. So this request is very, very minimal compared to our total budget for HHS. Let's see, I'm not seeing any more questions. Representative Keel, your hand is up. Did you have another question? No. Okay, Representative Cleburne, final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee for letting us bring this bill back forward and amending these dates in the bill. And I'm happy to always be available to you at any time to answer any questions that you might have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Cleburne, and thank you, Ms. Drost, for being here today. So I'm going to renew my motion to lay over House File 338 as amended for possible inclusion in our Human Services, Finance, and Policy Omnibus Bill. Okay, Representative Cleburne, looks like you have one more bill. We're going to next take up House File 3524. And it looks like you also have an A1 amendment. Do you want to explain the amendment and then we can do the motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the amendment, the author's amendment to this bill puts it in the form that I would prefer. The A1 reflects technical assistance from DHS. Specifically, the amendment clarifies the intent of the bill is to also include services provided by the Home Care Nursing Agency. Further, it clarifies the functional difference between care coordination and care evaluation. It removes a section of the bill that DHS advised was not really necessary. It adds DHS advised effective dates, and it allows DHS recommendations on where to place, where in the statute to place the updated rate setting methodology for homemaker services. And I just wanna say quickly, Madam Chair, that I'm very grateful for the technical assistance provided by DHS, and I greatly appreciate the collaboration between the Minnesota Home Care Association and the administration. We had multiple meetings and communications. And to the committee, I just want everyone to know that I always leave the door open for further conversations with members of the committee or with DHS. And I would also like to thank my co-author on this bill, Representative Keel, for her commitment to this work. I know it's important to her as well. Thank you. And with that, I ask for the adoption of the amendment.
Representative Cleburne. So I'll move the A1 amendment. This will be a voice vote, members. Please unmute yourself. All those in favor of adopting the A1 amendment to House File 3524, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Okay, Representative Cleburne, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 3524 was brought to me by the Minnesota Home Care Association. It contains specific and concrete steps we can take to increase access to the services that support older Minnesotans and individuals living with disabilities and complex health needs to remain living in their community, in their homes for as long as possible. This bill adds care coordination and care evaluation services under Medical Assistance Home Care Services. Additionally, it updates the homemaker services rates under the medical assistance waivers. The changes proposed in this bill will start to move us towards a more sustainable system of access to home care services, possibly delaying or avoiding the need for those more intensive and expensive services that we discussed in the last bill. Older Minnesotans and individuals living with disabilities and complex health needs want to remain living independently in their homes. Madam Chair, with me today are two testifiers. Home Care Association Executive Director Kathy Meserly. She will outline the three specific changes contained in House File 3524. And also we have Aja Kennedy, who will speak to us about the value of the homemaker services in her life. And Madam Chair, with that, I would ask you to recognize Executive Director Meserly. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cleburne. So Kathy Meserly, not seeing you yet, but if you're here, please introduce yourself and your title again for the record, and then proceed with your testimony. There you are. Welcome to the committee.
I'm sorry, my button was not working for me this morning. So sorry. Chair Schultz and members of the committee, my name is Kathy Meserly, and I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Home Care Association, a statewide association representing home care agencies who provide hands-on care to older Minnesotans and individuals with disabilities in their home. First of all, I would like to thank you for the investments made in home care rates this last session. They were appreciated and did make a difference. However, there still remains very real needs for addressing particularly underfunded home care services. The changes in this bill focus on nursing, rehab therapies, home care aides, and homemaker services. The bill contains three specific changes. First, it establishes a new reimbursement rate for a limited number of care evaluation visits. This change is aimed at implementing a reimbursement rate closer to the actual cost that providers incur for three specific kinds of home care visits. All three of these visits are required, and they go above and beyond a typical weekly home care visit, which is what the current reimbursement rate is set at. This involves a more thorough visit, which takes 2 to 3 times as long as a typical visit. The service plans are developed or revisited and adjusted during these evaluation visits. The three specific qualifying visits are, first, start of care visits, which are required at the start of any new episode of care to develop the service plan. Recertification visits, which are checks that are required every 60 days to ensure everything is going well and according to the service plan, and to make any modifications to the plan. And lastly, resumption of care visits, which are required if there's an interruption in the plan of care to check if there are any updates that need to be made. An example would be the patient being hospitalized for more than 24 hours. Secondly, the bill allows for a limited number of reimbursable care coordination units, which are aimed at recognizing at least a small amount of the care coordination work currently being performed by home care staff without any reimbursement. Examples of care coordination activities that home care staff carry out include reaching out to the pharmacy or doctor for additional guidance when a client has questions about medication, ordering additional supplies, calling and getting orders from a doctor when it appears additional support may be needed, and more. The additional reimbursement would only cover time outside of patient visits, which providers currently are not paid for. Finally, the bill restructures the reimbursement rate for home care services to be more reflective of current market data. Homemaker services are critical, but often overlooked service that help a person manage general cleaning, household activities, enabling them to remain in their home. The current rate for homemaker services varies depending on the service, how the service is accessed, but it is a very low rate that does not allow for a livable wage to be paid. Our home care service providers around the state tell us time and again how the low medical assistance reimbursement rate makes it extremely challenging to pay a sufficient wage to recruit and retain home care staff. And today, there is the greatest need for homemakers. If we as a state value supporting older Minnesotans and those with disabilities and complex health needs to remain living in their homes and communities and to avoid accessing more intensive and expensive care, we must increase access to these home care services. Aligning reimbursement rates will be more reflective of the actual cost of providing services to help increase access to critical services and support more Minnesotans to live in their own homes and communities for as long as possible. And now I will turn it over to Asia Kennedy to speak briefly about the value of homemaker services in her life.
Thank you, Ms. Meserly. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Kennedy. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Asia Kennedy and I live in Minneapolis. I'm here to testify in favor of HF 3524. I am a 29-year-old living with cerebral palsy, and I have relied on PCA and homemaking service support since I was a young girl. My mother had always worked full-time, and once I became school-aged, regular child care wasn't an option, as my physical needs became more than a daycare provider could handle. We then found out more about the homemaker services through the CADI waiver, which I was on a wait list for 2 years, and was able to utilize these services. My disability affects me physically, not cognitively. I am wheelchair bound and don't have enough physical strength to care for myself. These services allow me to function as a quote unquote normal person in society with the assistance from a homemaker with grocery shopping, preparing meals, cleaning my room, kitchen, living room, bathroom, washing dishes, washing clothes. All of the simple quote unquote tasks that an able-bodied person might take for granted. If I didn't have my care providers, I wouldn't be able to do any of these tasks alone. Caring for someone with a disability and or special needs can be a physically and mentally draining position. And my mom has taken on more of this care for me as it's extremely hard to find reliable care. I firmly believe that the pay rate has a huge impact on this. A minimum wage simply isn't enough to compensate for the work these individuals provide. With this being said, I'm asking legislators to support House File 3524 to propose a new reimbursement system for homemaker services that would allow for a higher reimbursement rate and specifically at increasing wages so I and we can find more individuals willing to provide care for these critical services. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Asia Kennedy. I'm so glad that you could be with us today. This is an important bill because I know that homemaker rates have not gone up in a very, very long time. And I've been hearing from individuals across the state that are demanding these increases. So with that, members, we have two individuals that are available for questions, Brianna Lindell from Minnesota Home Care Association and Kevin Goodnow. So if you have questions, please raise your hand. We don't have a fiscal note yet on this bill. Is that correct, Representative Cleburne?
That is correct. It has been requested, but it has not yet been delivered.
Okay. I'm not seeing any questions or comments. So Representative Cleburne, final words.
I would just say thank you to the committee for entertaining this bill and for helping us keep individuals living independently in their homes for as long as possible. It's important to me and you, and it's important to all Minnesotans. So I ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cleburne. So with that, members, I'm going to renew my motion to lay over House File 3524 as amended for possible inclusion in our Human Services, Finance, and Policy Omnibus Bill. Thank you, Representative Cleburne, for being with us today. Okay, let's see. The next bill we have is House File 2925, and the motion is to lay this bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. But it looks like we have a DE1 amendment. Do you want to explain your amendment, Representative Mohler?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and members. So this DE amendment incorporates feedback from stakeholders, mostly DHS. It makes some changes to the three kind of main parts of the bill, and it really puts the bill in the shape that I would desire.
Do you want to move your DE1?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So I will move the DE1 amendment.
Okay, members, this is a voice vote. Please unmute yourself. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the motion is adopted, or the motion is prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Mohler. Oops, I think she just froze up. Let's go to
maybe read her testimony. This is Julia Berksdahl from New York, Minnesota.
Okay. Oh, there's Marin.
She back?
Yep. And Kelly, Representative Mulder, you froze. So why don't you start again?
Thank you. I have no idea what happened. That has never happened to me before. And it looks like my internet connection is fine. So hopefully you're hearing me okay now.
We are.
Okay, wonderful. So members, last session, we adopted a policy framework for disability services that people who have disabilities should get to make an informed choice about where they live, and that people should have the option to choose to live in their own home. We've come a long way as a state to ensuring this is a reality, but of course, people who want to live in their own home still continue to face barriers. The current workforce shortage for PCAs and direct services professionals is making it much harder for people with disabilities who choose to live in their own homes. And so this bill would remove some of those barriers by doing three things. It expands options for people who live in their own homes to share services. It provides some training for case managers. It's especially important when there's a need to address like a caregiver not showing up or being ill and how to handle that situation. And then finally, it addresses a technical gap in the statute regarding appeal rights for service terminations. There are an appeal process for people who live in group homes and other residential settings, but we don't have that for people in their own homes. So this would just align that. And with that, Madam Chair, as you know, and I think you started to hear from, we've got a couple of testifiers today.
Thank you, Representative Mulder. We'll go to the first testifier. I see Maren Holden is on from Legal Services. Please introduce yourself for the record, state your affiliation, and then proceed with your testimony. And welcome to the committee.
Thank you so much, Chair Schultz and members. My name is Maren Holden, and I'm an attorney with Legal Aid, which includes the Minnesota Disability Law Center. The Disability Law Center, as many of you know, is our state's protection and advocacy organization designated to protect the rights of folks who have disabilities across our state. And thank you so much for the opportunity to discuss House File 2925 today. As you've probably heard from me and others before, supporting people who have disabilities to live in their homes is really a top priority for us and many of our clients, but there are lots of barriers to doing that. And we are so grateful for the work that this committee and the legislature did last session that Representative Mohler referenced about prioritizing informed choice, that people get to have informed choice about where they live, where they work, directing their services and technology. But despite that, we still continue to hear from clients about the barriers that they face if they're trying to choose to live in their own home. And there are still ways that our services system kind of puts a thumb on the scale that makes it a little bit harder to choose own home as opposed to other types of settings. And unfortunately, the workforce shortage is just making this even harder. And it looks like as if, and we're worried that this could, the shortage could wipe out much of the progress that we've made in supporting people to make that choice to live in their own homes. So we really think it's essential to keep our focus called for by the Olmstead Plan and by folks who have disabilities across the state to support people to make this choice if that's what they want, even as we try to address the workforce shortage. And we think House File 2925 would help by addressing a few barriers that we hear from about our clients. One is that if you choose to live in your own home, it's really on you and or family members or others to manage and support, coordinate your support schedule. So who's coming on Monday? Who's coming on Tuesday? What happens if someone calls in sick? What happens if someone doesn't have childcare that day? And that kind of coordination can really be a full or part-time job. There's a lot of parallels to in the home care context to the in the bill you just heard. But if you live in a provider controlled setting, that's not really something that you're responsible for. And so in conversations with the department, what House File 2925 would do is to provide training to case managers about how to help people set up really good plans. So it's not a case manager's responsibility to, you know, figure out on Tuesday morning at 7:30 when a PCA calls in sick what to do, but that everyone who's using in-home supports in their own home settings should have a really strong plan in place so that if someone calls in sick, they know what to do. And it's not, there's a backup plan, a plan B, a plan C. And this provision is really based on the informed choice training passed last year that used one-time HCBS FMAP funds. Another hurdle that people often find is that it's hard to get approved to share services, or there are ways in which people would want to share services that's not currently part of our waiver plans. And so this House File 2925 would expand the types of services that can be shared and some of the ratios at which they could be shared to make it easier for folks to share services if they're choosing to live in their own homes. And this is something that feels really pressing right now as a result of the workforce shortage. Finally, we've had clients come to us who've had their services terminated in their own home settings, and it turns out that there is a statutory gap here. The people who live in provider-controlled settings can appeal service terminations, but people who live in their own homes can't with the way the statute is currently structured. And so we would fix that gap to make sure that folks who choose to live in their own homes also have that option. We really think that these changes would remove some of the barriers to choosing to live in your own home, especially in light of the workforce shortage. And we really want to continue to make sure that this is a real option for people who have disabilities, but the shortage is really making it incredibly difficult, as you'll hear from the experiences that I think Julia, Ms. Burkseller from the ARC will share next. So thank you so much to Representative Moeller for your leadership on this, to Chair Schultz for hearing the bill, and we're really grateful to everyone who's provided input on this proposal, including the department, counties, and providers. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Holden, and thank you for working on these issues. We really appreciate all the input you're providing today, for sure. Let's see, the next testifier I have is Julia Burkstaller. Please introduce yourself and your affiliation and then proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Julia Burkstaller. I'm the Public Policy Director at the ARC Minnesota. Today, I'm reading the testimony of Lance Hegland, who was supposed to be here today, but could not due to illness, and he asked that we still read his testimony. Chair Schultz and members, my name is Lance Hegland, and I was a longtime resident of Southeast Minneapolis who recently moved to Brooklyn Center. I'm here to testify in support of House File 2925, as I believe it is an important step to help us stabilize and begin rebuilding our home and community-based services for Minnesotans relying on direct supports, like me, people with disabilities, those with chronic illness, and older adults. My journey highlights these needs. A little over 20 years ago, I needed to move into a nursing home because of the lack of home care services in rural Minnesota. Shortly after that, Minnesota was implementing the U.S. Supreme Court Olmstead decision, which empowered people depending on support services to live, work, and participate more independently and more inclusively in our chosen communities and in our chosen homes. After living in a nursing home for 20 months, I was able to move into my own apartment in a western suburb of the Twin Cities. Still, it was difficult to find and keep support workers, personal care assistants or PCAs who were reliable, qualified, and available. So within 2 years, I needed to move again into an apartment in Minneapolis near the University of Minnesota and other colleges, where I hope to connect with students interested in healthcare, human services, and education to work part-time as my support team members. Within 5 years, things had not improved much. In fact, beginning in July 2010, employment and vacancy data showed that it was becoming more difficult to find and keep support workers throughout the entire state. I needed to spend an incredible amount of time, energy, technology, and money to network, recruit, interview, train, schedule, and otherwise manage my team. It was a full-time job on its own, And as a result, I was no longer able to participate in meaningful employment to earn income. I pleaded with caseworkers for help. I was referred to many other community resources. Unfortunately, not even independent living skills, independent living services, ILS services, or adult rehabilitative mental health services, ARM services could help. It wasn't within their scope of practice. Many people living in my apartment building, along with several others living within 5 miles of me, were also relying on support services. They were experiencing similar staffing challenges. They were struggling to invest similar resources to maintain their team. They too struggled to maintain meaningful employment. Often we were duplicating efforts and competing against each other. The struggle became even greater due to COVID. It would have been much easier if we could have shared our support services and our resources, our time, energy, and talents, if we had chosen to do so. At the end of November, I could no longer maintain my health and safety in my apartment. I needed to move into a group home in Brooklyn Center. I lost 95% of my possessions due to very limited personal space where I moved. I lost a great deal of autonomy. I lost a great deal of privacy. I had to adjust to an entirely new team of support workers. This journey has impacted my physical health, my mental health, and my cognitive functioning. After struggling to meet my basic health and safety needs for nearly 2 decades, I'm exhausted. I feel defeated. Even if the workforce shortage is resolved during my lifetime, it would never cover the cost $10,000 to replace all of my items I've lost this year, the items I need to live on my own again. House File 2925 provides renewed hope for people relying on support services who've been struggling to stay in their homes over the past 10 years. House File 2925 is one of the first bills I'm aware of that empowers individuals and families to pool resources, to support one another, to be interdependent, because our society, and especially our direct support industry, have been lacking sufficient resources to meet our health and safety needs for many years. I believe House File 2925 provides additional options, a lifeline, if you will, to people relying on supports, our support workers, and our families. Thank you for letting me share Lance's testimony today. I also wanted to bring to your attention, members, the written testimony submitted by Harley Hargith from Winona, which demonstrates how important it is for people to have the choice to live in homes of their own. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Julia Burksdaller, and thank you, Mr. Hagland, for that testimony. Okay, members, I see a question. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and for the author of the bill. Representative Mueller, thank you for bringing this bill forward. Many of these changes, as you have mentioned, do require federal approval. Do we have any reason to believe that they will object to any of these changes?
Representative Mueller?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll defer to Ms. Holden to answer that question. That was a change that was made in the DE amendment. So if Ms. Holden could answer that question.
Ms. Holden.
Thank you, Chair Schultz, and thank you, Representative Albright, for the question. The piece that certainly will require federal approval is the shared services piece. And initially, as you may have noticed, the bill as drafted inputted a lot of the changes around shared services directly into statute. And the technical assistance we received from the department is that how and under what ratios folks are able to share services really lives not in statute, but in our HCBS waiver plans, and that it would be preferable make the changes to the waiver plans, and that they have not had experience difficulty with CMS approving those types of changes to the waiver plans, and that it would also require statutory changes to adjust the rates. And so those are also in the DE contingent upon federal approval. So it's not my understanding that we would expect difficulty with this specific type of change.
Thank you, Ms. Holden. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For either Ms. Holden or the Representative Mueller, certainly, you know, we're faced with a pretty substantial provider shortage, and I think you outlined very capably the benefits to allowing for shared services. But, you know, as you would observe, are there any drawbacks to shared services?
Ms. Holden or Representative Mueller?
Sure. Thank you, Chair Schultz, and thank you, Representative Albright, for the question. It's a great question. And actually, I'm glad that you asked it, because if there are drawbacks to sharing services, we think that some of the language in this bill and what's already required for in other contexts, the shared services agreement and the person-centered planning that goes with that should really get people and their case managers and the people that would potentially be sharing services to the point where they simply decide not to do it if the drawbacks for them in their individual situation are too significant. I think on the whole, what we want to see here is more flexibility so that people for whom this is a good choice and that would work for them can make that choice. But we certainly would not want people to utilize this option if it's not, if there would be too many drawbacks for them. And that really is very contextual and we think should be an individualized determination. And that's why there is language in the DE about making sure that DHS issues guidance about how do you inform choice in this process and kind of directions for support planning around getting to that agreement. On the broader scale, I can't think off the top of my head of any drawbacks to permitting more flexibility on this front with those protections around informed choice and person-centered planning.
Thank you, Ms. Holden. Have there been other states that have pursued this as well, and have they experienced any difficulties?
Chair Schultz, is that a question for me?
Sure.
You know, we do it now. Actually, there are quite a few services. Like, for example, individualized home supports with or without training is allowed at a 1-to-2 ratio. There are a lot of supports that are currently permitted. In 2019, you all passed changes to our CDCS to allow shared services in CDCS. So what we're really trying to do here is an expansion of what we've already seen working well.
Thank you.
I could look into more information about other states, Chair Schultz, if that would be helpful.
Thank you, Ms. Holden. Did you have something in mind, Representative Albright, about potential concerns?
No, I'm just, you know, it's to the point of, and the more that I hear about this, to the credit of both the content as well as the testifiers, it's like almost, you know, what's wrong about it is it sounds like it's such a promising piece of legislation. It's like, well, what could go wrong? You know, what's the downside to this? And so more than anything, just to try and observe, you know, what are the possibilities for drawbacks to shared services? I certainly fully endorse, you know, the opportunity for people to manage their own affairs. And I think that's the truest intent of what Representative Mueller is getting at here in expanding the opportunities for individuals to, you know, age in place and have a final determination in terms of how they want to live every day and be supported by the people that, as the testifier, Ms. Burschdaller said, have an opportunity to help and aid them without, you know, being forced into decisions that are maybe anathema to the way that they would want to live their lives. So just a final question, and I know it says in here that the curriculum is for, the cost is for training for as a one-time curriculum fee, and I'm just wondering if staff or Representative Mueller could confirm that these costs wouldn't continue past fiscal year 26.
Representative Mueller?
Again, I would defer to Ms. Holden.
Ms. Holden.
Thank you, Chair Schultz and Representative Albright, correct. Our intention here is for this to be a one-time required training for all case managers, and so the costs in 23, 24, and 25 would be to develop it and make that available and for all case managers to do. After that, the intention would be to keep that training module as an available training for case managers. There are lots of trainings that DHS makes available to case managers now, but that aren't required. So this would kind of go into that bucket of all those resources that are available to case managers if they choose to use those to for any of their continuing education, but it wouldn't be required. And that's why we don't expect there's no appropriation following 2025.
Thank you, Ms. Holden. Representative Albright.
No, that it sounds like it's a very fine, to use Representative David's line, fine piece of legislation. And Representative Mueller, you can look for an email from me.
Thank you, Representative Albright. It's great when we all support something. Representative Mueller, final word.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks so much for that discussion on shared services. And I was glad Ms. Holden brought up that we have used it successfully in other areas when it comes to CDCS. I had a constituent reach out to me and I offered to author that legislation a couple years ago because she has two adult children with disabilities and could really benefit from that shared services, and has told me that since we enacted that legislation, what a benefit it's been to her and her family. And so to the extent that we can use that model in this area too, I think it's really great. And one thing I neglected to mention in my opening statements too, there is a one-page handout that has all the other supporting organizations on it as well. So if members want to take a look at that and see the other organizations that are supporting this, I would encourage you to do so. And thanks for your support.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. I'm not seeing any more questions. So with that, members, I'm going to renew my motion to lay over House File 2925 as amended for possible inclusion in our Human Services Finance and Policy Omnibus Bill. Well, thank you, members. We're going to leave. I'm going to give you another extra 30 minutes of your time back. Tomorrow, we're going to hear two more bills on home and community-based services, so look for that. And everyone have a really great rest of your day. Thank you to all the testifiers for being with us today. So with that, members, we are adjourned, and I will see everybody tomorrow.